Okay, so I was asked to talk about hard thermal loops, but I thought that as a motivation for the long program that's going to be, that will take place here, it would be better to go a little bit beyond hard thermal loops. And since well, it has been shown in the past that the natural language of hard thermal loops, the hard thermal loop resonation, is that of kinetic theory, I would like to address this question also in the language of transport equations, given the success of these techniques. I only have 20 minutes to talk.
Oh, you have 30 minutes.
Ah, okay. Okay, so well, I'll talk.
Relax.
Okay, so now I will have more time, so we'll see how. Okay, well, so I'm going to address the question of going beyond hard thermal loops in the language of transport theory. But my main message in this talk is not going to present results or explain you. Well, I will briefly explain what we have understood with the language of transport theory. But my main message is going to pose some questions on the table which have not been yet correctly addressed or answered. And hopefully in the next few months, these questions will be answered. Well, so transport theory, I will start with some transport equations. The use of transport theory is only justified if the concept of quasi-particle is well-defined, which that means that we have well-defined quasi-particles which live long enough so as one can effectively talk about these quasi-particles to propagate. The point is these transport equations can be, in principle, derived from first principles, from QCD, for example. That's the problem we have in mind. So with these derivations, one can maybe provide what are the circumstances where the transport picture is valid. And then this approach may provide a link between the microscopic physics, QCD, and that of macroscopic physics. And in connection to Rick phenomenology, this may allow, for example, to understand some of the hydrodynamical approaches that are considered in the framework of heavy ion collisions. And essentially, transport theory is, as I will remark later on, useful for computation of transport coefficients and transport phenomena in a medium. Okay, I mentioned that transport theory is only valid if the concept of quasi-particle is well defined. Up to now, we know, we heard the talk yesterday by Karsh, that this is at least seems to be well justified in the very high temperature regime, much above the critical temperature of the transition, where the coupling constant turns out to be small. It's however not clear whether the same can be said when you are just a little bit above the phase transition. So I would like to make this note. However, in the domain where the quasi-particle picture works, what we have learned in the previous years is that transport theory is a very efficient way to describe the long-distance physics of the quark-gluon plasma and to treat with and to deal problems, dynamical problems that, for example, in the lattice one cannot study. And also by using these transport equations, classical transport equations, people have been able also to study numerically some of the dynamical phenomena occurring in these plasmas. So from now on, I will just consider that this quasi-particle picture is valid, and all what I'm going to say is around close to equilibrium. Okay, one of the nice features of transport theory as compared to a pure quantum field theoretical computation is that it allows to compute transport coefficients in a very, very simple way. In quantum field theory, well, or in general, the transport coefficients are given in terms of Coupe relations, which tell you that the transport coefficient, here for example, the shear viscosity or the bulk viscosity, are given in terms of correlators of, in this case, for example, a traceless part of the energy momentum tensor. Well, yesterday we also heard in Carr's talk that now there's apparently a new approach to study spectral functions in the lattice, and I think that will be very interesting in the future because this will allow for numerical computations of transport coefficients, which up to now we are not yet there. But well, the main problem is that if one tries to address this computation in quantum field theory, this in general requires a resummation of an infinite set of diagrams, Lever diagrams, which is rather complicated. But fortunately, it has been shown by John and John Jaffe and some other people that this program of resumming Lever diagrams is fully equivalent to study a simple linearized Boltzmann equation, at least in order in the coupling constant. But this equivalence has only been shown to be to hold, at least up to now, for scalar theories. Gauge theories turn out to be much more complicated because apart from this resummation of these ladder diagrams, one also has to take into account another type of resummation, that of the Hartzell loops, which account for device screening and ladder damping. This is also an infinite set of diagrams which have to be resummed. So up to now, even this equivalence has not been shown to hold for gauge theories. People have computed 7 transport coefficients with the use of Boltzmann equations. And a lot of people actually, the dependence on the gauge coupling constant and the temperature can be already guessed by using a simple relaxation time approximation in a Boltzmann equation where one simply simplifies the collision term. And up to now, well, we have understanding of the leading order terms of several transport coefficients, except for the bulk viscosity, which still is not yet known. Well, this is to summarize that at least at weak coupling, in the weak coupling regime, there's a bunch of things that we can learn from transport equations. As I said before, the viscosities and some of the transport coefficients have not been computed with Feynman diagrams, but this has been done in a scalar theory, and we don't have any reason to believe that these would not hold also in a gauge theory. And also the Hartzell effective theory can be obtained from transport equations. And this has led to have a very simple picture of what's going on in this very high temperature regime, is that we have quasi-particles propagating in the background of classical chromoelectromagnetic fields. And this very simple picture has been constructed with the help of many people in this field, starting with the work with Pisarsky and Bratton, who realized the separation of different scales, that of hard modes and that of soft modes, where G is the coupling constant. Those scales are very, very well separated. Since the occupation number of these fields is very large, people have realized that these modes can be treated classically, while these other modes have to be treated as simple quasi-particles. So this is more or less what we have learned, that there's this nice simple picture of transport phenomena, at least at leading order, one could, and this can be derived from QCD by deriving transport equations from QCD. But taking into account that this classical picture holds, one can simply start from pure classical considerations, try to get transport equations from there, and then see what one can say about that. Now my question here is this picture the same if one goes beyond leading order in G? And I will try to at least to say what a pure classical approach tells you about the beyond leading order physics. And I will see. So then I will assume that the classical would have quark-gluon plasma can be described by quasi-particles propagating in the background of classical electromagnetic fields. And these quasi-particles obey some classical equations for motion, which are the Wong equations. Every particle has associated a color charge, QA, running from A to n squared minus 1 for an SUN group. To be noticed is that there's a force law very similar to the force law in electrodynamics, only that you have to contract the color indices. And as a new ingredient here is that the color charge also is a dynamical variable, and it evolves dynamically. The existence of this last equation can be understood from the fact that when you construct color currents from these point particles, which have to act as sources in the Young-Mills equation, you need that the color current is covariantly conserved rather than conserved. So without this dynamical variable, this is impossible to get. Transport equation, classical transport equations then are just constructed by first introducing a distribution function, a probability distribution function, which tells you what is the probability of finding a particle in one point in phase space. And there are some other physical constraints like on-shell evolution that can be taken into account in the momentum measure, or there are some other constraints related to the color charges, like for example, one can show easily that the Wong dynamics is such that there's a quadratic Casimir which is conserved, and also for SU3 a cubic Casimir which is conserved. So this conservation in transport theory can be taken into account by putting these constraints on the color measure. Okay, so now this distribution function evolves in time with a transport equation, where C is the collision term that I'm going to put to zero from now on. So just using the Wong equations, one ends with this sort of equation. And the color current now can be gotten from the distribution function simply by multiplying by momenta and color charge and integrating over momenta and color. This color current then can act as a source in the Young-Mills equation. Well, the nice thing of this equation, one of the nice things is that if we assume that we have an external background of gauge fields, we can solve the equation in perturbation theory in the collisionless limit. So if we imagine a situation where we start from equilibrium, and yes, we assume that we have some gauge fields which make the system to depart a little bit from equilibrium, we can just simply solve the equation as an expansion in this recoupling constant. And in principle, the equation is solvable in perturbation theory in a very simple way like this. In particular, if you solve the equation in the first order, like this, and from there you find the color current with this solution, and you assume that this color current comes from an effective function, you find that this very simple approach already reproduces all the hard thermal loops, all the hard thermal loop effective action. But there's nothing that tells you that you should stop there, so one can solve every order. But actually, it's even also possible to solve the equation exactly, because this is just an equation which tells you that a function in phase space in the collisionless limit is equal to zero. So all what you have to do is to look for constants of motion under the Wong dynamics. So at least in a couple of cases, this perturbative series can be summed up, or can be simply gotten from just by looking at the equation. And this is, for example, the homogeneous limit or the static limit. Now, from this exact solution, one could try to find what is the color current that you obtain from it, and what is the effective action. What is the effective action one finds? And if you do that before integrating over the color charges, you find this result. I have to mention that if you go now to a clean space, for example, this term here becomes imaginary, and this is the problem of finite chemical potentials becoming imaginary terms there. It should be stressed that here you don't need to go to a clean space, you can work in real time. And also, well, this is the solution for the static situation, but as I said, you can treat the equation in the most general case. So one, for example, one could try to compare this with quantum field theory. This is the term corresponding to Debye mass. And if you go from a static to non-static case, then you reproduce all this hard thermal loop effective action. So in principle, you will have the same type of generalization for the other terms. And I should mention that Dietrich Bodecker and Nicolin did such a study for the cube term. Okay, so now the bad news comes when you compare with quantum field theory, because you realize the following, that you still have to do the color charge integral. And there's a problem for the fourth term. Up to the order three, the color charge integral is given in terms of the quadratic and cubic Casimirs. The same happens in quantum field theory, where you have the same similar expression but with traces of color generators. So at four order, classical kinetic theory produces a different result from quantum field theory, which, however, goes into the correct limit for high-dimensional representations. Here, for example, I show the result for SU2, where the classical computation gives a result in terms of the dimension of the representation, which is just the way you normalize your color measure and the quadratic Casimir, while the same result for an arbitrary high dimension, well, an arbitrary representation of FSU2 gives you such a result. So as you can clearly see, for very high values of J, the two results tend to agree.
Does the
yeah. No. That's not because it comes from the, I showed you before the value of the color measure. And a cubic term comes from this constraint here and gives you the cubic Casimir. So the cubic term is correctly reproduced, but not the quadratic, not the cubic, not the quartic term. And well, what one has to say is that in the limit of the abelian case for QED, there's not such a problem. So the problem really lies on the treatment of the color algebra. So the treatment really lies in the treatment. The problem really lies on the treatment of the color algebra. So one can imagine that you can still may have quasi-particles propagating classically, but you should consider the color degrees of freedom quantum mechanically. So one should maybe try to go beyond that and instead of treating the color as a continuous variable and talking about a distribution function F, one should better go and talk about matrix in color space, the Wigner function, and that, for example, if we consider matter in fundamental representation, this could be written in terms of something which is the entity colorless plus something that has color degrees, color index. Well, the equations, the transfer equations for this quantity have been derived by several people in the market and can be written in terms of this equation. Color current then is just given by projecting the Wigner function with this SU2 generator. And obviously, you could then project this general equation for colorless and colorful excitations. And this is the result for SU2. For SU3, there's another term which goes proportional to the symmetric structure constants. So as you can see, even for computations of transport coefficients, where people use essentially classical transport equations, where this term is absent and you have here a collision term, well, as you can see immediately here, you have here coupling that you cannot avoid at higher orders in the coupling constant. So the problem of transport seems to be a little bit much more complicated. Well, this is in general also the case if you will start from classical transport theory and try to get equations for different colorless and colorful excitations. Well, the problem with this equation that has been derived and used by several people is that it has precisely the same type of problem as the one of classical kinetic theory, saying that it reproduces correctly the cubic term that I mentioned before, but it also fails in reproducing correctly the quartic term. And not only that, in classical field theory at least, all the terms you get are local in the static case. But even if you try to solve the equation here in the static case at this order, which is relevant for the quartic function, you not only have a numerical mismatch, but you also have non-local terms there. So I can't say much about this, but the only thing is that I think still we need to understand what is the correct transport equation beyond leading order. And well, I think this is an important problem in the field, as well as the computation of several transport coefficients to beyond the order that we know right now, or computation of the bulk viscosity. Thank you.
You said there's no problem in QED, certainly not with the non-abelian color algebra, but in what sense is there no problem? That
well, when I said no problem,
there are non-local terms in QED also,
well,
so.
But I say no problem, I mean the following. I was doing a computation with transport theory, and I was comparing the effective action from transport theory with a one-loop effective action.
In a high-temperature limit.
In a high-temperature limit of QED.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is that these coefficients, all the coefficients, match at one loop.
Okay, and that limit, you're neglecting other terms.
That's a static limit.
Okay, we can talk about it later. I just would like to understand better what limit of QED this classical theory reproduces.
Well, this is what the people who are doing lattice simulations start with when they do the three-dimensional reduction.
Uh-huh.
Can you address the question of gauge invariance, means what gauge fixing term you use for the quantum gluon field and what gauge choice you make for the classical chroma field, because there is a problem of gauge invariance in the whole background field method of QCD, that gauge fixing parameter appears everywhere. And can you address the problem of gauge invariance, what gauge fixing term you use for the quantum field?
Yes, this is
catching. Yeah, in deriving the classical transport equation from the quantum QCD theory, you need to have to some gauge fixing term for the quantum gluon field.
This is gauge invariant.
No, how do you show that?
It doesn't start with a quantum theory, it's just writing classical.
But you should derive it from some quantum theory, the classical field equations, right? And there you need to fix a gauge for the quantum gluon. And if you do the background field method of QCD, which is more consistent theory, which put classical chroma field and quantum gluon together, there is a general problem with the gauge fixing parameter. So how do you just address the gauge invariance of the whole?
You don't see this problem.
And also there is another problem. You are addressing transport equations, and I understand that you are trying to solve some non-equilibrium problem where there is no temperature, so you are calculating every quantity in terms of temperature. So where is
that? I said that I was studying the problem close to equilibrium.
So it's not applicable far beyond the equilibrium, means when it is very highly non-equilibrium system, these things are not applicable because you are expressing everything in terms of temperature, where temperature is not defined in equilibrium.
Well, this is the result for close to equilibrium. I don't know what to say for out of equilibrium yet.
So these equations are not applicable at the, for example, early stage of Fabian collision.
Yeah.
Well, two questions. One is, if you do everything to leading order and logarithm of 1 over g, do these problems with higher dimensional representations play any role?
Doesn't have any problem when you describe quantities which depend on the quadratic Casimir. So you have g squared.
The leading order scattering term in the Boltzmann equation will be properly reproduced.
No, I think that the complete answer for g squared, all the summing blocks, probably this could be answered with classical.
So leading log terms. So
yeah.
Far, okay. Then the second question. This,
because the problem comes in higher order terms.
Fine.
So as soon as you neglect those, you won't find any problem.
That's good. Then the second question is, if you have a time-dependent background field, a time-dependent background field contains quanta in it.
Contains?
A time-dependent background field has quanta in it because it has a radiation field in it. And so how do you know what to include in the distribution function for what you're calling particles compared to what you're including in your classical field?
Well, this has been, you're talking about the separation of modes, right?
No, I'm asking, how do you know if you have some system, you know, which has glue in it, okay? There's some bag full of glue, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know what you should be treating as classical fields and what you should be treating by single particle distribution functions?
It's a question of what are the energies of the different modes. because from the Bose-Einstein distribution or whatever, you look at, you see that that if you look at the energies, which are, for example, of order GT.
So then you have a dynamical term in your equations which describes the conversion of particles, which are part of your classical field, into modes, and modes into classical field. Because if they can be, if it's just some scale, there has to be some conversion between one and the other. And I don't see that in the equations.
That should, I guess, come from the collision term. But No, I haven't written down that.
I'm puzzled of the following. If you take your equations, the time-dependent equations, and you, from some initial condition, you wait a long time, you won't get that kind of free energy out of it. It will classically equilibrate. So what have you done to get this quantum
equilibrium? Here I use classical transport equations, but they put distribution functions which are Bose-Einstein or Fermi-Dirac distribution functions.
Yeah, but they evolve, suppose they evolve in time, mm-hmm. and then you wait a long time, then they won't take this Bose-Einstein form anymore. And classical field will probably just disappear, and well, you get the Rayleigh-Jeans problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here I treated a different problem, which is close to equilibrium. Yes. So I guess.
Close to the initial state.
It's the same question. How do you radiate away the classical field?
Use the microphone.
It's the same question. How do you radiate away the classical field? I say it's the same problem. It's how do you radiate away the classical field? If you start from something which is in, you know, has some classical fields and some gluons in it, you wait long enough and the classical fields are going to radiate away into particles. It's absolutely clear.
It's classical.
I have neglected the effects of collision, so
maybe I can also ask one simple question. Where do the charges of your particles enter in these Wong equations, actually? I mean, you know, depending if you have quarks in the fundamental representations or gluons in the adjoint. As far as I remember, there were just structure constants, or
here.
In these constraints that they enter. Yeah, I think we will thank Christina again. And,